Welcome to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories from Hacker News. I am Sarah, and joining me as always is Mike.
Hey everyone, glad to be here for episode 502.
Today we are covering the top stories from yesterday, August 28th, 2026. We have a really great lineup today. We are going to talk about why graphical user interfaces should actually be fully keyboard driven, the release of the new open-weight GLM 5.3 AI model, a campaign to get your Windows license refunded, the big release of HTMX 4.0, and finally, a rant we can all relate to about websites forcing you to download their apps.
I am definitely looking forward to that last one, but let us kick things off with HTMX 4.0. This was a massive hit on the front page yesterday. The HTMX team released version 4.0 after about 8 months of work, and it is a pretty significant update under the hood.
It really is. The biggest internal change is that they finally migrated from the old XML HTTP request to the modern Fetch API. They mentioned they always use the old way for backwards compatibility, but moving to Fetch just simplifies the internals and opens up new possibilities for extensions, especially around streaming HTML.
Right, and for users, the biggest breaking change is how attribute inheritance works. In version 2, a lot of attributes were inherited by default, kind of like CSS. You put an attribute on a parent div and it applies to the children. But in 4.0, you have to be explicit. You have to add an inherited suffix to the attribute. It is going to be a bit of an upgrade burden, but they actually provided a command line tool to help find where you need to make those changes.
I love that they also included LLM skills files in the release. They literally shipped files specifically designed to be read by large language models to help developers use HTMX4, debug it, and migrate their code bases. It's such a 2026 thing to do, just acknowledging that AI is writing a lot of this code now.
The comments on this were hilarious, as always, with HTMX threats. The top comment was from someone saying they really like HTMX and want to convince their coworker to use it, followed by the disclosure, "I am CEO of HTMX."
Yes, the classic HTMX lore. For anyone confused, it is a running joke in the community where everyone claims to be the CEO of HTMX. It perfectly captures that slightly unhinged, old-school internet vibe the project maintains. No corporate speak, just good tech and memes.
Exactly. But jokes aside, people in the comments were raving about the development stacks they are building with it. A lot of people are using what they call the GOSH stack, which is Go, SQLite, and HTMX. Or the HUG stack, Hypermedia, Unix, Go, and SQLite. People are finding that for prototyping and even production apps, skipping the heavy React frontend and just using Go and HTMX is incredibly fast, and AI coding assistants like Claude understand it perfectly.
Speaking of AI, let us move to our second story. GLM 5.3 is now open-weight. This is the latest model from Z.AI, and the benchmarks are looking incredibly strong, particularly for coding and what they call emergent cyber capabilities.
Yeah, they claim it is the most capable open weights model for coding right now, beating out their previous 5.2 model by 50% on internal benchmarks. But the cyber capability is what caught a lot of attention. It is apparently state of the art for vulnerability discovery and exploitation benchmarks.
Which is exactly why the open weight aspect is so crucial. A commenter named Revolving Throw pointed out that GLM 5.3 is a sweet spot right now because it's much less touchy about cyber tasks compared to the big US models. If you're doing legitimate security research, you don't want your model constantly refusing prompts because it thinks you're doing something malicious.
That sparked a really interesting debate in the comments about the economics of running these models locally versus using cloud APIs. Someone joked about dropping a fat stock of cash on the upcoming Mac M5 Ultra with 512 gigabytes of unified memory just to run this quantized to 4-bit locally.
And then the math nerds came out. One user broke it down, pointing out that even if you spend $6,000 on a rig and get 14 tokens per second, it would take you 3 years of running the machine 24/7 to break even, compared to just buying tokens on the inference market.
Strictly from a cost perspective, the cloud wins because of economies of scale. But other commenters pushed back, saying it's not just about the money. It's about privacy and, more importantly, owning your stock. If you rely on an API, the provider can change the model, censor it, or deprecate it entirely. If you own the hardware and the weights, nobody can take that away from you.
That is a very Hacker News mindset, and I completely respect it. You are paying a premium for independence.
Transitioning from owning your AI to owning your operating system, our next story is about a campaign called Refund for Freedom. The website is a guide on how to get a refund for the Windows license that comes pre-installed on almost every new laptop you buy.
This is a battle that has been going on for decades. The premise is simple. A laptop is a general-purpose computer. You should not be forced to pay for a specific operating system if you just want to wipe it and install Linux. The campaign is pushing for transparent pricing and hassle-free refunds.
The reality of actually getting that refund is anything but hassle-free right now. The site lists the policies of different manufacturers. Lenovo and Acer technically have reimbursement procedures, but they usually require you to physically ship your brand new PC to an assistance center. HP and Dell just flat out ignore you or say their terms state you have to return the whole computer if you do not accept the Windows license.
The comments were full of war stories. One user recalled a magical experience back in 2011 with Dell, where they just called customer service, said they did not agree to the Windows terms, and the rep immediately wired them a €143 refund for Windows and the bundled antivirus.
Those days are long gone. Someone pointed out that Dell probably just had a policy back then to not argue with the 1% of nerds who actually asked for it. Now, customer service is entirely outsourced and those bypass protocols are gone. You have users on the thread taking companies to the Italian Antitrust Authority or small claims court just to get $40 back.
It is the principle of the thing. But as a few commenters noted, as bad as the PC market is, the smartphone market is infinitely worse. On a PC, you at least have the physical ability to wipe the drive and install Linux. On a smartphone, you are completely locked into the Apple or Google duopoly.
Someone mentioned Linux phones are becoming more viable, but then you hit the reality of modern life. You need a smartphone to read a menu at a restaurant, to authenticate your bank login, to show your ticket at a concert. Try doing any of that on a custom Linux phone without the official Android or iOS apps. It is a nightmare.
Which perfectly sets up our next story, a blog post by Charlampos Kardaris titled GUIs Should Be Fully Keyboard Driven. It started as a response to a recent debate on Hacker News about terminal user interfaces versus graphical user interfaces.
Right. The author is saying that a lot of developers prefer terminal apps simply because they are keyboard driven. But his argument is that there is absolutely nothing preventing a standard GUI from being fully navigable by keyboard. In fact, standard design guidelines from places like GNOME explicitly say every action should be possible with a keyboard.
The discussion on this was fantastic, especially around accessibility. A user named RootedBox challenged developers to turn on their OS voice assistant, put on a blindfold, and try to use their own app without a mouse. They pointed out that the keyboard allows power users to fly through an app, but for folks with disabilities, the second a tab index is off, they hit a brick wall.
That led to a great conversation about the curb cut effect. The idea is that when you build accessibility features like curb cuts on sidewalks for wheelchairs, it ends up helping everyone, like people pushing strollers or carrying heavy groceries. In software, making an app keyboard friendly for a blind user makes it incredibly fast for a power user.
Someone called these situational disabilities, like if your trackpad randomly breaks and you cannot even click the download button for the new driver because the website does not support the tab and enter keys. We all eventually face situations where we need these accommodations, so we should view them as a net positive for software quality, not just a compliance checklist.
Absolutely. And speaking of terrible software experiences, let us bring it home with our final story, a blog post simply titled, "It Works Better in the App." This was a massive venting session on Hacker News about the modern web experience on mobile devices.
Oh my goodness, this is my biggest pet peeve. You search for something, click a link, and immediately get a giant banner covering the screen telling you to download the app.
Reddit and Twitter were called out as the absolute worst offenders in the comments. Twitter will not even let you dismiss the banner sometimes. You either get the app or you close the top. And Reddit has started doing this thing where if you try to use iOS Safari features to hide the distracting banner, they have actually killed the scroll functionality on the page itself. So even if you hide the pop-up, the page is broken.
It is so hostile to the user. One commenter said, "Nothing says we do not want your business like a non-functional web page." LinkedIn got dragged in the comments too. They show a bottom sheet dialog, and if you dismiss it, it forcefully scrolls you all the way back to the top of the page. If it appears a second time, it sometimes just crashes the tab.
It is all driven by metrics. They want you in the app so they can track you better, send you push notifications, and show higher active user numbers to advertisers. but as one user pointed out, the barrier to install an app is so high now. If an app is just a wrapper for a web page whose only purpose is to spy on me, I'm just going to close the tab and not use the product.
People are fighting back with browser extensions like uBlock Origin on Firefox Android or custom bookmarklets to kill the JavaScript that blocks scrolling. But it is exhausting that we have to play this cat and mouse game just to read a paragraph of text on a screen.
It really makes you miss the days when a website was just a document, which ironically brings us right back to the philosophy of HTMX. Keep it simple, keep it functional.
Exactly. Everything is connected. Well, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us for episode 502 of HN Pod.
We will be back tomorrow with more of the top stories from Hacker News. Have a great day, everyone.